Are you planning to apply to medical school next summer? Would you like to be accepted by November? Let's hear how this pre-med did it.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Hello, thanks for joining me for this 394th episode of Admissions Straight Talk. This episode of Admissions Straight Talk is brought to you by our upcoming live webinar, Get Accepted to Medical School in 2022. Which will be presented on December 10th by Accepted's own Alicia McNeese Nemankar. Alicia will cover how to choose schools thoughtfully and strategically, apply early without compromising quality, prepare for interviews, and much more. You really don't want to miss this invaluable advice. Reserve your seat at accepted.com/medschool2022. Again, that's accepted.com/medschool2022. Did I mention that it's free? Our guest today, Mary Thomas, is happily anticipating the start of medical school. Accepted to medical school in October? Yes, I said that right. She hasn't yet begun her med school studies, which will start this summer. I'm going to let Mary tell most of her story herself, but here's a bit of background. She graduated from Pitzer College in 2019, took a couple of gap years, and applied this cycle to medical school. Now, that's pretty sparse background, and there's a lot more interesting material in Mary's story. Let's learn more and specifically how Mary got her first acceptance to medical school in October of this most extraordinary year. Mary, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you on. Now, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and where you grew up?
Yeah, of course. So I grew up in Edmonds, a suburb in the outside of Seattle. And I grew up with two older siblings, and I grew up with my parents having really being really involved with their jobs. So I spent a lot of time alone growing up, and I was a really avid reader. And so that was something that led me to become really passionate about social justice as I was in high school and everything. And that is how I ended up in college, going to Pitzer College in Southern California, because I knew it was a school that was also really emphasized social justice in the curriculum. So I ended up going down there for college, and it was a really good fit for me and was a big part of how I ended up pursuing a career in medicine.
And that actually leads right to my next question. How did you decide to pursue a career in medicine? What were some of the formative experiences?
So my older sister, and we've always been really close, she is also she's in medical school right now. And so that was something that was always kind of in my mind as something that I might be interested in. But I would say I didn't really become, you know, really driven towards it. And I didn't really take it that seriously until I was in college. I started working with a volunteer organization or working with a grassroots women's mental health group. Okay. And it was working with these women, and they came from really challenging backgrounds and faced a lot of really difficult circumstances. And I was a really passionate volunteer for that organization. And I was there for the entire 3 years of starting my sophomore year of college. And I was totally devoted. I think I missed maybe three of our weekly meetings the entire time that I worked with them.
As a volunteer, what did you do with these women? Did you talk to them? Did you take them shopping, babysit for them, whatever?
So we had our weekly meetings, and it was totally community led, but we would do a wide range of activities like meditation. Sometimes we did things like yoga. We did kind of a unit on dance therapy. We would do art therapy. We would have a lot of discussions. We didn't really call it group therapy, but, you know, discussions where we were able to share a little bit about experiences that other people might not understand that were outside of that community. So my volunteer work was helping plan our weekly meetings, helping sometimes we'd have presentations about certain therapeutic techniques and things like that. So that was my role with that organization. And I loved working with them. And even though I was a super devoted volunteer, I felt like I didn't have that much to offer, you know? And so that was what made me realize that medicine would be a really powerful career for me to pursue, because the women in this group didn't have a lot of access to healthcare. And I realized that maybe that's something that I would want to pursue, to be able to give even more to this group. I felt like as just a college student, I didn't have that much to give, even though I really wanted to help. And it was such an awesome organization.
Were the challenges that these women faced, were they mostly financial? Were they mostly economic? Or were they emotional, socioeconomic?
Yeah.
What were some of the things? It sounds almost like they were largely emotional from the activities that you were organizing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mental health group, specifically a group for immigrants for Latina immigrants. And so a lot of the women were monolingual Spanish speakers. So that was definitely a challenge. Some of them were undocumented. They were mostly all low income, from a low income community. So those were definitely some of the main challenges. But, you know, what kind of surprised me is we didn't actually talk about those challenges as much as you might expect. I think a lot of the challenges that we talked about in our group were things that pretty much anyone could relate to, you know, challenges with the family, with your kids, with your friends, or with your community. I was a little bit surprised by that, but I felt like I could really contribute. And they always appreciated that I was the same age as a lot of their children. So I was able to share kind of that experience.
Different perspective, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, this experience would almost make me wonder why you didn't become a social worker or a therapist or something like that. So did you test your hypothesis that medicine is really the way to go with clinical exposure?
I definitely did. And I had already, going into college, I had already trained as a certified nursing assistant. And then I actually was inspired by my volunteer work with this immigrant women's group to go live in Mexico for a little while. While I was there, I volunteered at a nursing home in Mexico where I was able to get a little bit more clinical experience. Then I also shadowed with surgeons and with physicians in outpatient facilities in Seattle where I grew up. So those were ways where I was able to see. And some of them had a lot of connection to what I was doing in Southern California, and some didn't so much, but it was still a really good experience.
What did you find to be the most meaningful, I think you answered it in terms of the group that you were working with. And you had two gap years, right? What have you been doing during your gap years?
Immediately after college, I definitely knew that I wanted to move back to Mexico, where I had spent a bit of time during college, and I had been there volunteering at the nursing home. I made a bunch of friends there, and I lived with a host family that I was very close with, am very close with still. So I moved back there for 6 months, which is the longest amount of time you can stay with a tourist visa. While I was there, I studied for the MCAT, which was a very serious endeavor. I studied for it like it was my full-time job, really from the moment I woke up till the moment I went to sleep. So I felt like it wasn't totally the Mexico living abroad experience I had hoped for, but it was definitely important for me to do that studying for the MCAT. So I took the MCAT in the winter after I graduated. And then I started the AmeriCorps program that I'm working with here in Los Angeles and that I've been doing for this entire year.
Got it. Did your studying pay off on the MCAT?
It did end up working out. Yeah, I did get, not an astronomically incredible score, but a good enough score that I've been getting some interviews and ultimately an acceptance.
That's the proof in the pudding. What was the hardest part of the application process for you once you got the MCAT done?
I know you said once you got the MCAT done, but I would definitely have to say the MCAT. I don't know if you could really explain to someone who hasn't taken the MCAT how truly difficult it is and how demoralizing it is. I never expected, I thought I'd taken the SAT, I've taken lots of tests, it'll be just like that. And it really was not like that. I felt like I was waking up every day and having someone tell me I was never going to be good enough because it was so hard. And I felt like I was never really going to understand. And the questions are meant to be hard like that. I think even though I ended up getting a good score on the MCAT, I still look at those questions and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have no clue. I think that it really definitely, leads to a really demoralizing situation. And I definitely had to really try and stay positive. And I'm very lucky to have only had to take the MCAT once. I did a lot of practice tests, so I kind of knew what score I was about to get when I did take it. But yeah, that was a really difficult period of time that I spent doing that. And I also wasn't a hard science major in college. I studied Latino community health, which I loved, but I think I was definitely a little less prepared for those, for the science sections of the MCAT.
Well, obviously you had to take the pre-med prerequisites, right?
Yes, yeah. True, of course. And I'm taking physiology now and I'm kicking myself because all of this was on the MCAT and I tried to learn it all on my own studying before taking the MCAT, and that was hard to do. And I think if I had been taking some of these courses in college, because I just took, the bare minimum requirements, biology, chemistry, OChem and physics.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, obviously you studied just a ton for that. So that was one way to handle the challenge of the MCAT. But you also mentioned like the emotional toll of the MCAT in the sense that, how am I going to be good enough? And am I ever going to the score I need? How did you handle that?
I wish I could say that I had like a good way to handle it. It was really difficult. And I do think I kept it together fairly well. What really helped me in the most difficult moments when I really wanted to give up is just thinking about my reason for doing it and hoping to one day down the road have some skills that I'll be able to give back to communities that, you know, don't have access to healthcare, and thinking about those communities that I worked with as a volunteer in Mexico and in Southern California, and how much they gave me as a volunteer, how much I learned from them, and just really wanting to be able to give back to them. So I thought about them and how much, you know, I wanted to be able to contribute and give back to that community.
So just reconnecting to that why.
Exactly. And so, you know, now I'm able to say it really did pay off. But that's what I always thought about in the most difficult times. I said, keep doing it because, you know, I really want this.
That makes sense. That's great advice. How did you approach the primary application when you finally, the MCAT was behind you, you knew your score, COVID probably had just hit at that point. How did you approach that?
I mean, I was staying really on top of it. I think that after the MCAT was done, I sort of felt like everything was going to be fairly smooth sailing. And I would say like it sort of was. Those secondaries were kind of, were very overwhelming. But definitely with the primary application, I started really early. I had a lot of people review my primary application, review my experiences. I put the whole thing together and then looked over it again so that I could see the gaps in it and try and improve it again. So I spent a lot of time on that. And I submitted my primary application just about as soon as you could submit it.
That's always helpful. How many schools did you end up applying to?
I applied to 40 schools.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
How did you stay on top of the secondaries? They all basically come at once. I mean, you might have a few stragglers, but
they really did. And it was very difficult. They all came in about 2 weeks. So I spent 2 weeks where I cleared my schedule and I did nothing but secondaries from the moment I woke up till the moment I went to sleep. And I barely left the house for 2 weeks, which is fine because it was the beginning of COVID and, you know, there wasn't really anything to do anyways. But yeah, I was stayed really focused on that. I did maybe three a day for 2 weeks. I had pre-written maybe like four or three of the secondaries before they came out, but I really did write a lot of them. I tried to stay really organized, keeping it all laid out in a spreadsheet, because even though it didn't seem that important at first, by the time I was on secondary number 35, like I'm seeing questions that I know I had written before and I did not want to rewrite them. It would have taken forever to just read through all of my other ones to find it. So having a spreadsheet that laid out each question and how I had answered it was super helpful to be able to go back through and kind of reuse chunks that I had already written. And I also had family members read through my essays, which was super beneficial because after just being so exhausted and I'm writing, you know, 10 pages of secondaries, I could barely even bring myself to read through it. So having someone else do that last read through to check for any typos and everything was super beneficial.
What do you believe is key to success? Well, you mentioned some keys from staying on top of them, getting them out quickly. But in terms of the content, what do you believe is key to success with secondaries?
I guess I would say tying every question to experiences that you've had. I think that sometimes the questions, you know, you could write a really good answer that's just kind of your opinion on it. But I think it's really beneficial if you can say, here's my opinion that I formed from this clinical experience where this happened, or from this volunteer experience where I gained this knowledge and work with these kinds of people. And so then you're sharing a little bit about your personal views, and you're also sharing a little bit about experiences you've had that will help you be a good physician.
It's true. Good approach. Definitely. How many schools did you interview at out of the 40?
I have had six interviews so far.
Congratulations.
And I have two coming up. Thank you. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm lucky to have gotten so many. I didn't expect that at all.
That's fantastic. How do you prepare for your interviews?
I have done a lot of interview prep. You know, I did a lot of just standard interview prep where people would ask me questions and I would go back to them. I also wrote out kind of bullet points for pretty much every standard interview question you could get. And maybe it's just the schools that I've been interviewing at, but I really haven't gotten any crazy, weird questions. It's really been mostly standard interview questions. I think there's been just a handful where I didn't have an answer pretty much prepared already. So definitely that prep helped a lot for those interviews.
Now, obviously, all interviews this year are virtual. Are you missing the experience of actually visiting the campus?
It's kind of hard because of course, it would be amazing to be able to travel to all of these different schools. And I think I would probably gain a lot more understanding about the schools. And I'd love to see these different cities that they're in. I mean, I have to say, I can't really complain about not having to spend hundreds and or even thousands of dollars flying all across the country and taking time off, more time off of my AmeriCorps program. And I mean, it's a huge expense to be flying and staying in hotels and even renting cars and things like that. So I'm a little bit grateful for it. Yeah.
Okay. Did you have any Vita interviews? Did you have to take the Vita, really, is the question?
I did do the Vita. Yeah, it was pretty difficult.
Yeah. Any tips?
I prepped a ton. I would prep my answers to my video camera, and I would have my mom text me interview questions to really simulate it. She would text me a question. I would set a timer for 1 minute, and then I would do my 3 minutes to the camera, record it on my computer, and then watch it back and kind of make those notes. But it was really difficult, but I did a lot of that prep so I could really be as prepared as possible.
Okay. I wonder if they're going to continue with Vita. I honestly don't see a lot of point to it. It's like, if you can do this, what we're doing now, what do you need that for? You can't ask a school specific question via Vita. So, but yeah. I guess the schools will figure that one out or see something in it that I don't see.
I know. I hope for the future students that they don't do it, because I think that was probably a lot more stressful than any of my in-person, or I mean my actual virtual interviews I did.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. Having done videos where I'm just talking to the camera and I feel like a complete idiot. I mean,
exactly.
I can understand that.
It's so awkward.
Incredibly awkward. What are your plans for between now and the start of medical school? Obviously you're in AmeriCorps. How long is that going to go for?
So my AmeriCorps program ends in exactly a month. And I don't really know. I didn't expect to get an acceptance so early on. So I had sort of been preparing to get a clinical job or try and get a clinical job after my AmeriCorps was over, because I didn't have a lot of clinical experience. And I was really preparing for the worst, to not get accepted this cycle and maybe even restart studying for the MCAT or something like that. Now, having this acceptance so early, I really don't know what I'm going to do. And also that it's COVID, so maybe some of the more fun things that I would have liked to do are not really an option right now. Exactly. Things like travel, not really an option. So I don't quite know yet, but definitely relaxing.
Is there anything you wish I would have asked you?
I guess maybe about sort of coordinating everything to be a good applicant. I was lucky to have my sister's experiences to lean on. So I think I learned a lot from her experiences that were able to help me. I knew going into college, and even though I wasn't 100% sure that I would be pursuing medicine, I knew how important it was to keep your GPA up. And so that was something I really had at the back of my mind all throughout college. And I know that a lot of people, maybe they don't know they're going to pursue medicine, or they don't realize how important the GPA is considered in that process. But yeah, I took that really seriously. And I actually didn't take organic chemistry or general chemistry at Pitzer. I took it at a different college over the summer where I knew I could really focus and get those good grades that you need. And I also actually withdrew from chemistry my freshman year because I was going to get like a C in the class. I was doing really badly. You know, I wasn't flunking, but I was going to get a C, and I withdrew because I knew it was going to have a really bad effect on my GPA. And so having that withdraw, I thought was going to be an issue during my applications, that they were going to ask, why did you withdraw? But that didn't end up being the case at all. So I feel like that ended up being a very good strategic move, where that C would have really hurt my GPA. And so I withdrew and I took it the following summer.
Now, you were also a non-traditional major. And other than the fact that it made MCAT prep, I guess, more demanding, definitely did. You know, many people who start college knowing that they want to go into medicine or thinking that that's their inclination, they don't want to take that path. They go, you know, the bio major, the chemistry, biochem, whatever it is, because they feel that that's what they should do. You took a very opposite tack.
Yeah, I definitely was just personally more interested in, you know, I never really considered myself a super sciencey person, didn't love my science courses. Public health, community health was a lot more interesting for me. And then, yeah, additionally, not those classes, but some of those science courses, you're taking labs, there's just a lot on your plate. And I probably wouldn't have been able to get as good of a GPA as I was able to get choosing different classes where I was more interested in it. And I was able to really do the work and be passionate about it and excel in those courses. So I don't know if I really majored, I didn't take that major for that reason, but it ended up working out that way, which was a good thing because the GPA is so important.
GPA is so important. And also, and as you say, when you're passionate and you love what you're studying, you're likely to do better in it. But it also gave you a point of diversity, if you will, in the application process. You were a Latino studies major, if I remember correctly, right?
It was Latino community health. So I did a self-design major that really combined Latino studies. Yeah.
Right. Obviously, you had some health aspect to it, but it was an unusual major. And I think it might actually, as long as you got the pre-med prerequisites in and did well in those courses, and obviously supplemented by a competitive MCAT, the fact that you did that course of study was probably a point of distinction.
Yeah, I mean, when they're looking at, they are looking at thousands of applicants. It's so true that any little
thing. Thousands of biologists. Not that there's anything wrong with biology. They're looking for diversity. And it's not just ethnic diversity, it's diversity of perspective, et cetera. Then in terms of your education, you would have had it. You clearly did have it.
So. Yeah. And I was also grateful to just use college as a time to explore different things that I'm passionate about. I don't know. I was never really passionate. Still, I'm not very passionate about my sciences, my hard sciences. So I was glad to be able to explore other things.
Medical school?
Yeah, sort of. I know that I'll still need to do a lot of those hard sciences, especially in that first year and a half. I know I can do it. I did fine on the MCAT and everything like that. I took my prereqs in college, but I know I'm not going to enjoy that first year and a half. I don't think I'm going to be thrilled or absolutely fascinated by it, but I think that the clinical experiences will hopefully outweigh that.
I'm sure they will. Mary, I think we're running out of time. This has been a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for joining me for this podcast number 394. And I really want to thank you for sharing your experience and perspective.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again, Mary. We're going to link from the show notes at exhibit.com/394 to resources related to this show. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 394th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/394. Final thank you to today's sponsor. Get accepted to medical school in 2022, an accepted webinar. Access the insight you need to apply as successfully as Mary has done. Register ASAP at exhibit.com/medschool2022. This is a Mission Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.